Order twos and threes. If you've watched this far, clearly at this point you've actually been introduced to the wonderful Gavin and Paula Daniel. And thus far they've told us their story about growing up as part of the South African Indian community in South Africa, about being Indian themselves and actually growing up culturally with that, but also Hindu Indian and Christian Indian, and how there's even subcultures within that that need to be negotiated and both but also celebrated and enjoyed. And yeah, there's just a whole world of just intrigue and curiosity with what they've been able to share about their own perspectives in that. No doubt that you also have enjoyed hearing about their romantic story. In this part they actually talk more about that at length and how their children come into the picture, as well as actually Gavin's own story of coming to faith, and ending off with a little bit of actually how they came to New Zealand, how they actually ended up in this country by God's provision also. It's a wonderful story of obedience to God's will and faithfulness to God's will. And also just that idea of actually God working in all circumstances, but often not at our pace, and sometimes learning actually the necessity of actually waiting on God for his purposes to become clear. If you are watching, I'd just remind you again, we have a number of different platforms you can listen to us on. Via Anchor, we link up with Google Podcasts, we link up with Spotify, we link up with iTunes and their podcasts, Apple Podcasts, I should say. So if you follow the link in the description, you can actually check that out. As well as if you would like to join up with us and connect with us, communicate with us on Facebook, we also have a Facebook group, a growing, slowly but surely Facebook group, which we love to actually engage with people and talk about some of these topics and these ideas and these conversations. Maybe you'll even get the opportunity to engage with Gavin and Paula yourselves. In the meantime, though, I really hope you enjoy this. It's a story I've heard any number of times, but it's of no shortage of affirmation for me about actually just how God hears us in our circumstances and is involved in the nitty-gritty of our lives. I hope you were blessed by it as much as I have been and was again upon hearing it again. Love you guys, and Merry Christmas, and have a great new year. Hopefully you're enjoying the fellowship, the food, the festivity, the fun, and all of those things that come with Jesus being the reason for the season. God bless everybody.
Obviously there is a, I mean, life stories are complex and we can delve into them for hours. And I would love to, but then I'm also aware of the fact that, you know, we're not going to sit here until midnight talking about all of the things we could talk about. So if we fast forward a little bit and go, okay, so when did you become a Christian? How did that work for you, Gavin?
Well,
with Paula, that must have been quite a journey of prayer.
Yeah.
And I'm aware
in some respects, and
I'm aware there's a trajectory as well, because like part of that in that point, you arrived in New Zealand at one point, right? And you've had your children in the mix of that. Like, you know, maybe giving prefacing
bullet points.
Question,
Did you
become a Christian before coming to New Zealand or after arriving in New Zealand?
So Paula and I, so interestingly enough, Paula only told me this later, but for every year of our marriage, every day of our marriage, she prayed for me. And for my salvation, I'd say. it was something she did secretly or quietly as a wife. But in those years that we were married, I must say we were happily married, and there was no issues. There were no problems in our marriage. So nobody could point a finger and say, oh, that non-Indian, that Christian girl, look, we told you their marriage wouldn't work. It didn't happen that way. Wow. And so it was really good. And every Sunday I would get up and I would basically take Paula to church or get her ready for a church, and then one of her friends would fetch her and take her to church. And then when our children were born, every Sunday morning I would do the same. I would help her to get the children ready for the church. And whilst they were gone to church, I would clean up the entire house. I would cook a big breakfast or brunch. and have everything set out so that when they came from church, they would have a meal.
I think Luke needs to stay home from church now, is what I'm hearing.
And you would cheekily tell me when I was walking out the door, don't forget to pray for me.
Yeah. And you're like, I won't.
You better believe it, Kevin.
So we were married for 14 years. Wow. And then our son Jonathan was born. And
backtrack that. Just something very important in our story,
yeah,
is that
Uncle Jonathan.
We had quite a few people speak into our lives. A lot of people speak into our lives, but to me, obviously not approaching Gavin, because he was quite a cheeky bugger. The pastor now,
no.
The pastor in our church said to me, yeah, it's been so many years and you're still not a Christian. And he goes, and there's a whole lot of people, because it was my nephew's dedication. And he says to the pastor, oh, you know what? I've got a landline. I've got a cell phone. God's still not calling.
I used to tease, as I say, I'm still waiting for the calling. It's not coming. The calls aren't coming.
And my mother, I looked at my mother's face. I'm having my poor man to go home.
Yeah, because I was saying that to the pastor of the church.
But anyway, we went to Lazarus again.
Yeah. My friend who raised me from the dead.
And Lazarus and Pam are very, very involved in church, and they are an awesome couple. And so one day they, I think I had just had Shanna. I think Shanna probably was about a year or so. And
this is still in South Africa?
Yeah. Still in South Africa.
All right, cool.
And Laz said, hey, you guys, I would love to take your life to dinner. But we went to dinner, but he didn't tell us that he was inviting other people. We thought it will just be the four of us. So when we arrived to dinner, there were was another couple, and she was pregnant with her fourth child. And there was this pastor, Valerie, who was this American pastor, an evangelist, I think, and her German husband. And Pastor Valerie was sitting next to me. And so we were talking to Lynn, and Lynn was saying, and they were saying to her, Lynn, if this baby is a girl, are you going to try again for a boy? And she goes, yes, because God has promised me a son. So I will try again if this baby is not a boy. So then the conversation went around as, hey, are you going to have any more children? And I said, no, we're not going to have any more children. We're quite happy with both our girls. And that's it. So Gavin says, yeah, we're done. And Pastor Valerie says, no, you're not.
Gotta love those prophetic words, eh?
And Gavin, who's normally so calm, very collected, doesn't get cross easily. He was irritated. I could feel the tension next to me. And he said, what do you mean there'll be another one? She goes, no, you said you're done, but God has not said he's done. Hmm. And Gav said, well, I said I'm done. I say I'm done, then we're done. And then she pushed on and she said, well, I've got news for you, my friend. You are not done. So throughout the evening, she was sitting, Gavin, of course, didn't like this woman, done with. And she was sitting next to me and she said to me, she said, Paula, I strongly believe that God is, you're going to have another baby. And this other baby, this baby that you have is going to be a son. He's going to have a very, he's going to have a strong name. And he is going to bring his father to the Lord. That was her word for me. And
That's a big word.
And she was so specific, Christine, in that she said to me, wherever I am in the world, you're going to find out you're pregnant round about the time your daughter turns four. She was so specific. She says, that's how I feel. And she says, please send word to me when you find out you're pregnant.
Mm.
And I promised you, although being a Christian and being a believing Christian, I thought I'd never encountered like that strong somebody with such conviction telling me something. And I thought, she was quite this boisterous lady, and I thought she's a crazy woman,
Was she at all nervous about that? Because sometimes I get words for people, right? And they're sometimes quite specific. And it is terrifying to go up to somebody and say to somebody, this is what God has told me. Because you're like, I'm really hoping that that is God.
you don't know how it's going to be received by the person.
So strong, Christine.
Yeah.
The word came out so confidently.
Yeah, that's incredible.
She just said it. Yeah.
Wow.
And the weird thing is, when we were dedicating Shanna, the night before, my friend Losh and Salvin, who are very good family friends of ours, and they are Jonathan's godparents. Mm-hmm. She was with me and she was helping me with the cake, and we were doing stuff because we were having a big lunch after the dedication. And she said, you know, she used to have these dreams. Was a gift. Mm. God, she has these dreams, and she used to be so afraid of them. She actually prayed at one point and said, Lord, I know this is a gift, but it's too scary. Take it away. And she said to me, this was Shanna's under 2 months. And she said to me, Paula, I dreamt that you had another baby. I said, really, Losh? I don't want to hear that. I haven't gotten over just
everybody has
baby.
To stop talking about this third child.
And then she says to me, I just dreamt that this baby was really, really sick. That's all she said to me. And she says it was so scary and whatever. And I didn't even think about it. And then a year or two later, we met Pastor Val. And Pastor Val said that to me. And we kind of, Gavin was, of course, very irritated with this woman.
Mm-hmm.
And I told my mom, I said, Mom, this is what happened. And two weeks before Shanna turned four. Shanna's birthday is on the 14th of September. And I found out I was pregnant on the 28th of August for Jonathan.
God has a sense of humor, doesn't he?
He does. And so we fast forward to when Jonathan was born, and then Paula asked me, she said to me, listen, I've been going to church for many years with the two girls. And now that we have a baby, I'd appreciate it if you came to church and helped me with the children.
With the children.
And so I said, sure. I said, yeah, okay. And so I got up every Sunday morning, got ready, went to church with them.
And this is still in South Africa?
It's still in South Africa.
Still in South Africa. Okay, cool. Yep.
So we went to church. We went to a Baptist church at that time, and really enjoyed it. Small congregation, very intimate and stuff like that. And then something bad happened. So Paula's sister came to stay the weekend. Yvonne came to stay with us, and we went to church. And then the pastor, for some reason, I don't understand why up till today, but he put up these slides or videos. I can't remember. But there was like, he put up the slide of videos. He put up a video of a temple in India with rats in it or mice or something. And he said, this is Hinduism. And then he put up another video of these terrorists, Muslim GR terrorists, and said, this is Islam. And then like, I'm sitting there, not a Christian, come to hear the word of God. And then I've got this man that was talking about, according to me, absolute nonsense. And so I became more and more annoyed as he went on, and I just stood up and I walked out of the church service. I went and sat in the car fuming and thinking, oh, this is not what I came to hear. Wow. And so my job was to actually collect the children after church from Sunday school and bring them back to the main auditorium, and we'd had coffee and chat with everyone. But I was sitting in my car and the kids were running around, and there's cars, people are leaving church. And so it was a bit of a dangerous situation, but I was just very, very annoyed. And so eventually Paula couldn't find me, and we got the children and came to the car and found me sitting in there. And so we went home and we had lunch. And at lunch, I was very, very quiet. And at the end of lunch, I said to Paula, don't ever ask me to come to church again. And I walked away, and then we had a swimming pool. So I went to go and clean my swimming pool and just be away from that situation. But while I was cleaning the swimming pool, I realized that I was being an absolute idiot, because it wasn't Paula that was at fault. It was that pastor. And so I went back to her later on and I said, listen, I'm so sorry. Could we actually go to another church? And she said, yeah, sure. So we went what we called at that time church shopping. And so we'd go to one church, like, their service is a bit too long, you know. Oh, we got to another church. Like,
don't like the music.
Like, yeah, just one person playing the organ. And like, you know,
The potluck is very measly. They're not very generous to the food.
They've got strange people up the front with the flags. You know, we don't like that.
So we went to a number of churches, and then a cousin of mine invited me to his church. And the moment I walked in there, I fell in love with it, because it was very charismatic. Everyone was clapping and singing, and it was very joyous. And I found it, woo, I like this kind of thing. So we started going to this church regularly. But what happened was, so Paula used to serve in the children's church. And so she used to be there. I used to be sitting alone in the church service, because my children are in children's church. My wife is there and I'm here. But interestingly enough, we used to go to a life group, and the people that led the life group were really, really lovely people. They understood that I was not a Christian. And so when we used to meet and it came to time to pray, they would say to me, hey, Gavin, listen, don't worry. If you feel uncomfortable, you don't have to pray. You know, they never ever put any pressure on me.
That's cool. That's really cool. Yeah.
I really love that. I love the fact that they respected me and they understood that I didn't feel comfortable to do that.
Yeah.
But what happened was, on that day, the pastor was preaching a sermon, and he was talking about having an aha moment, you know, when the light bulb turns on.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was talking about, like, when you figure it out, like, wow, I got it now. But he made it so real, because for me, a lot of things that I heard before were very theoretical, if I can say it in mm-hmm. some way. And here's a man just talking about Christianity from a humanistic point of view. And he said, oh, you know, I'm a pastor of this church. And it was a big church. There was over 1,000 people there. And he said, listen, I get up on some mornings and I don't feel like actually going to work. He says, I'm a pastor, but I do have that. I go through the stuff that you do. He said, my wife and I, we go through financial problems just like you guys do. He said, don't ever think that because I'm a pastor, I'm sort of favored by God and I've got God's favor over me and everything's perfect in my life. It's not like that at all.
No.
And he was saying, yeah, and you know what I'm talking about, Christine. So, and then he mentioned something, you know, he said, like, even my wife and I, you know, we have our, you know, he said, oh, you know, pastors and their wives, they're not supposed to fight and argue. So we just call it intense fellowship that we have together.
And I like that.
So he said, yeah, you know, my wife and I, we have intense fellowship every once in a while.
I'm stealing that. That's great.
Good one. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, but he spoke about it and he said, listen, it's not about this building. This building is just a building. Once the people leave it, it's just a building. But when the people fill it, it becomes a church. He said, it's not about me. It's not about the person sitting next to you. It's not about anything. It's just about you and your relationship with Jesus. if you accept Jesus into your life and want to have a relationship with him, forget about anyone around you and what they say, what they're doing. If that guy comes to church on a Sunday dressed up and got his Bible in his hand on Monday, he's an absolute idiot and being horrible, don't worry about him. That's his problem. He's answerable for his. He's going to have to answer for his behavior. You don't worry about it. It's about you and your personal relationship with God. And for that, in that moment, I got it. The light bulb turned on. Why was I worried about all the people and what they were doing and not doing and all the different theories and the different churches and different ways of praying and all of that? That wasn't important. The most important thing was that I was going to have a relationship with God, and it was an intimate one. And so at altar call, I found myself standing up and walking to the front. And I got to the front and I realized, oops, I'm the only one there. There's nobody else there.
The whole prayer team.
Yeah. And so in the meantime, Carrie, our life group leader, she used to sit at the front row of the church. She got up and she literally bolted and ran to the children's church to say, Paula, Gavin's at the front.
I was going to say, get your wife? Wow.
Paula says, no way, never, can't be. And Carrie says, come with me now. And the next thing, Paula's standing next to me, holding me, and I can just see tears running down her eyes.
Wow.
Because what she had been praying for all those years had come to pass.
That's incredible. That must have been an amazing moment for both of you.
For me, it was liberating in the sense that I think I used to have a lot of prejudices I used to judge a lot of people and a lot of things, but I realized it. Why should I bother about all of that when that it's not about that? It's about me. And so I think the it was a turning point in our lives in that when I went home that day. In fact, Paula said that the kids were asking, touching and saying, Mom, Daddy really become a Christian? Because they were little at that stage, you know? And then she said, yes. But I think when I got home that day, for the first time in my life, I felt not only being a husband and a leader of my home, but also being a spiritual leader of my home.
Yeah.
So that one aspect that was missing in our home was me being the spiritual leader of our home.
Yeah.
And that was the turning point. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
I'm curious as well, if you don't mind, I want to ask a couple of things here. Because firstly, it was said that Jonathan would actually be influential in bringing you to the Lord, right? And that there was, say, sickness, perhaps involved in that as well. And you also the name Jonathan is significant because of your uncle. Is that not correct, Paula? Is there anything you can fill us in there with regards to those things?
Jonathan.
So we didn't know we were going to have a Jonathan.
Do you know something my mum said to me when I did get married? She said, Paula, you chose the hard route. You chose the long way. And the truth is, you didn't wait. You didn't trust God enough that he would give you what you want. So now I'm saying to you, and I'm saying honestly, that you've taken the long route. God will give you what you desire, but you've taken the long route. So be steadfast in your faith if you want Gavin to come to the Lord. So it was in that waiting that I really found Jesus, really, really found Jesus. And I think that when you take your eyes off, like Gavin was just saying, he was so worried about what judging everybody around him, you know, and it took that one moment for him, that light bulb moment for him to realize that, you know, it's not about them. And that's what happened with me, is that I was praying, and I would fight and I would cry. Then I'd go through moments where I'm fed up. I'm not doing this anymore, Lord. I can't do it. It's too hard. And then I'd not go to church for about 3 weeks or so. And then the following week, then I guilt would, and then I'd I know what is real. I'm just cross with you, Lord. You're taking so long. Why are you doing that? I know I sinned. Forgive me, but I really want this, you know? And it was just like a relationship. I'd go through these honeymoon periods with Jesus where everything was hunky-dory and I would get a word and feel energized, and then I'd go through this period of, oh my goodness, is this ever going to come? And then feel completely discouraged and low, 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 and God would put somebody in our life to pick me up again. But then it took me so many years to realize that I was so strongly, it's like all my attention was on Gab and I was praying for Gab and whatever, and not realizing that there were so many things in my life that needed to be aligned with Jesus. That if I wanted this husband of mine to follow Jesus, I needed to be aligned spiritually with what the Bible is saying. So that alignment, and then suddenly I took my eyes off Gavin. I said, Lord, I'm tired. There we go. You deal with it. I'm done. I'm going to do what you asked me to. And then I started getting more involved in church. I started doing actively. I activated my faith, if I can say that. I had it, but I was doing nothing with it. And then completely took my eyes off him. And in that process, like you were saying, Jonathan was sick. Jonathan's godparents said to me that, you know, you're going to have this baby and you're sick. Gavin and I have incompatible blood types. And so our baby tested positive for something called Coombs test, a Coombs test where the baby is severely jaundiced. And
it's life-threatening.
And it can be life-threatening. And if your bilirubin levels reach above, I think, 380, the baby could either be brain dead or go blind, and, you know. Wow. And Jonathan was born and really, really sick with jaundice, but blood jaundice. Wow. And he was in hospital for 2 weeks. And I remember Lush coming.
In an incubator.
And I remember Lush coming to hospital. And she was just standing at that door and she was sobbing because what she dreamt had come to pass. And in this time, Gavin, not being a Christian, was just phoning all our friends and just saying to them, please just pray. Just pray, you know, just pray that Jonathan. And so when we were deciding on a name, I have this amazing uncle, which I speak about or speak of him all the time. I think all my close friends know this about me, is that I have this amazing uncle, my mom's youngest brother, who has been an absolute role model to
and both, a rock.
And our rock,
yeah.
Both together and I. And, you know, he is an amazing man. He stands by his word. He, when he says something, he means it. He's very slow to speak and very quick to listen.
Yeah.
Nice.
And he speaks the truth. And he, whether it hurts you or not, he says it like it is. The one time very early in our marriage, I decided that life was too hard. I was going to leave. Because when we got married, we lived with Gavin's family. So it was very hard for me
being married. I hear you.
So at one point we were having a little bit of friction and I packed my stuff and I said, I can't do this anymore. And I went back to my mother, asked Gavin to leave me. He dropped me off at my mom's and he said to mom, you know, Paula just needs a little bit of time out and whatever. And my uncle so happened to be staying at my mom that night. They were in a different province and they came. yeah, different city. So they came to spend time with mom. And when they came back, I was obviously crying the whole day, so went to bed early. And my uncle said to my mom, "What's Paula doing here?" So my mom said, "You know, there's something that happened. She doesn't want to tell me about it, but Gav did say that they had a little bit of an episode, and she doesn't, she packed all her things and she's come back." So he came into my room, knocked on my door, woke me up, and sat next to me and asked me, "What are you doing here?" And I said, "Well, Gav and I had an argument, and Gav's dad, and then there was a whole lot of things." And I mean, and he said, "Okay, let's take a few steps back. You do remember that when you married Gavin, he came as a package. He was a package deal." And I go, "Yeah. When Gavin asked you to marry you, when he asked you to marry him, you said you knew the situation that he was in." I said, "Yes." And he said, "You also knew that it was going to be hard, because he financially supports his family and they've got nowhere to go." And I go, "Yeah." And he says, "So how does this work, Paula? Every time it gets a little bit difficult, you run home to mom. You signed up for this. You went into this marriage with your eyes open, knowing exactly the disadvantages or the difficulties that you could encounter. So pack things, call your husband, and go back to your home, because this is not your home."
Nice.
Yeah, so that's one awesome episode of Uncle Jonathan. But we were convinced that Jonathan, our Jonathan, was going to be a girl, because when we didn't find out the sex of any of our babies. And so,
even though we knew what Pastor Val said.
Yeah, even though.
Yeah, of course, yeah. She could still be wrong.
No, she's wrong.
Yeah, we saw this, what they call the 4D scan, and like this had a pretty face, and we said, "Oh, it's going to be a girl." And so we had the name Gabriella set, and we said, "Oh, we're going to have a Gabriella." And so when Jonathan was born and the doctor held up Jonathan and said, "Hey, Gav, meet your son." I'm like, "What?" And he says, "Your son." And I look like, "Oh no, it's supposed to be a Gabriella." And so we didn't have an alternative name, and then it was only natural that we called him Jonathan after our uncle Jonathan.
And
it sounds like he was
Jonathan's got such a beautiful meaning.
Does, yeah. It sounds like Jonathan, Uncle Jonathan, was a real almost father figure for you in those moments where you needed a dad.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Very much so.
Yeah. But and coming back to the whole situation about Paula praying and what she was going through, one of the big things that attracted me I wanted to be a Christian was that I had this woman that I was married to that was strong in her faith. She never ever once in all those years of marriage pointed a finger at me or criticized me for not being a Christian. All she did was she showed me what it is to be a good example of a Christian. And by watching her on a daily basis, that's what made it attractive to me. And so I have to acknowledge that as well, because that was part of what led me to my salvation.
Yeah.
Is that I had the strong woman of faith that never faltered, never gave up. And I watched that.
Wanted to, but didn't. Nearly, but didn't.
She didn't show me the weaknesses. So I just saw the strong side, you know.
Constantly, like we were teased, we'd have an argument. He says, "You know me, I have a good life. I have you. We have the girls. There's no need for me to be a Christian." And I would quietly say to him, I said, "Gavin, it's going to happen one day, but you know what? It's going to happen so quietly. There won't be boom, bang, crash. It's it's going to happen so quietly that you're going to stand up and you're not going to be able to deny that Jesus is Lord. That's what I said to him once. And that's exactly how it happened.
Yeah.
It was a quiet, it was almost as though Gavin always knew Jesus.
Yeah.
But he didn't want to acknowledge him.
Mm. I mean, that's what I'm hearing in your story is like you knew, it's like God had a hook in you from like a little kid and you knew it was there and you were just like, not sure about it. You know? You're just a slow learner, Gavin. You're a slow learner. It's okay.
In science, I show my students, I'm doing astronomy at the moment, and I show my students up till today, I show them the Louis Giglio video of Indescribable.
Yes.
Mm.
And have you watched it? And so Louis Giglio shows the, well, he talks about Genesis and God's creation and, you know, how he created the heavens and the water and the light and everything. And then he goes on to, he has an image on the screen behind him and he starts to count the stars. And we're basically showing you that God is so big that even the billions of stars in the sky can't be, he's bigger than that, you know?
Mm.
And so like, yeah, when I watched that video, I think like, yeah, I knew about him, but I was like, maybe, I don't know. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
It could be the Big Bang Theory. It could be creation. I'm not sure. You know,
Oh, that's so awesome though. Like that's such an awesome story of faithfulness and perseverance and love and just, that's awesome. It's just awesome.
Yeah. And then the next part of the story comes where we decided to move to New Zealand. And by this time, both of us were Christian. We were strong in our faith. And I said to Paula, I said to her, you know, I've always had this idea of moving to where we're choosing between Canada and New Zealand. And then we eventually chose New Zealand.
Was that hard for you, like in terms of the, I mean, obviously your family unit and where you're like established, like, you know, family friends?
It was very hard because immigration is one of the toughest things that you can do. In fact, there's some stats about it that so many marriages break up because of immigration. It's one of the biggest things that a human being can go through. Because basically you have to leave your entire history behind you.
Mm.
So everything that you know, everybody that you know. So for example, I don't have childhood friends in this country, you know, they are in another country. Some of my childhood memories are in another country. So it was a major, major decision for both of us. But in saying that it was what we wanted. We chose that path. And when we went through the process, so basically I did everything myself. So in terms of applying, getting the paperwork done, getting NZQA to assess my qualifications and registering with the Teachers Council, all of that I did online. Paul and I agreed. We said, if this is God's will, then every little gate will open along the way. Mm-hmm. If we find that it's becoming a struggle, then it's God's showing us a sign that, hey, guys, it's not meant to be, or maybe it's another time or another place or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So when we did apply to come here, everything, it's amazing. I mean, that could take another podcast, but so many things happened along the way that proved to us that God was in it. So we didn't decide to do it on our own. We decided to do it, you know, saying, God, if it's your will, then it will happen.
So is all your extended family still back in SA?
Yeah, we don't have any family here. I have a cousin.
So with everything that's happening and been happening in South Africa over the last wee while, that must be super difficult, being this far away from everyone who's over there and seeing your country that you love and the people that you love mixed up in, and just, I mean, it's just horrendous in some situations. I don't know if your family's close to anything that's going on, but I mean, how is that for you, being immigrants, watching that happen in your country of birth?
Yeah, it is. It is difficult. I think, but there are moments in South Africa where things do go wrong. But at the same time, I must acknowledge that a lot of South Africans actually exaggerate things, and no, they do. They have the tendency to do so.
Yeah, and the news always does. The news loves blood and horror and terror. Like,
So it's just you want to make it sensational, you know.
Yeah.
And so I always say, when people ask us why we moved to New Zealand, and I don't say, oh, it was so violent and it was so bad and things were not good. It's because we chose to come here. We chose that. But you'll also, I'm not putting other South Africans down, but you'll also meet people that will say, oh, you know, it was terrible. I mean, everyone's entitled to their own opinion. It is difficult. I think the difficulty is that when we watch a wedding and like everybody, all our family are together celebrating, and we are millions of miles away from them, you know, those are the difficult moments.
Can I go on, Paula? Sorry, you go ahead.
We've lost quite a few very close people through COVID.
Of course. Yeah.
In South Africa, that part has been really tough. My mum had COVID in July, and was very, very, very hard, because I actually thought that we were going to lose her.
So she was hospitalized and everything? Like, it was...
She preferred to stay at home rather than in hospital, because hospital, you're going and you're not coming back, you know?
Right, yeah, yeah.
So, you know, I'm extremely close to my family, to my cousins and my extended family. And I've kind of realized that that will always be home. A part of it will always be home. Although I've laid down new roots, it's an ache in my heart that will never go away. You know, and I don't so much miss the country as I miss the people. I miss relationship. I miss having history with people, and that's really hard. It's really that's hard. I miss the culture of me just going to my friend's house and not phoning and saying, hey, are you there? But just pitching up and walking into her home and just opening my mom or her fridge and, oh, I'm hungry. What's there? Because that's how it used to be. You know, our family and friends would walk into my home unannounced, make themselves a cup of tea and chat with me and sit down. Hey, how are you? What you doing? On a Friday, I used to be really busy with all my cake orders. So my friend would come over. She'd cook dinner for the kids. She'd clean up for me. You know, that I missed the community in which we kind of saw, where we just, that relationship, you don't have that here. And
It's different. It's not that you don't have a relationship. You have.
It is different in terms of, you know, just, and I think obviously that also came from people having history with us.
Yeah, history has to be built, and I think that takes time.
Yeah.
And also culturally, there's certain things, and it's not right or wrong. Don't get me wrong. It's just different in that what's culturally accepted with some people is not culturally. I mean, it wouldn't be right if I just walk into your home, Christine, and just walk into your kitchen and open your fridge.
You know, I would actually be totally fine with it. I say to people all the time, I'm like, you're coming to my house once, you're making your own cup of tea. Like, that's just how it works, you know?
But we wish it would, you know? We wish it would, like you're saying, like that kind of familiarity.
I mean, my mum was an immigrant from England, and she would often talk about how, like, she would feel like split in two, because she would feel like here she had her life but no history. And then she would go home or back to England and she'd have all the history, but they wouldn't know her current life. And they didn't have all the current stuff. And so she always felt like she belonged in both places, but didn't quite belong in either place.
Yeah. I think that's exactly how I feel.
Yeah.
But I think the interesting thing is when we watch our children that have grown up in this country, this is their home. So this is...
Yes.
So when we watch that, and then like our oldest daughter is engaged and she's going to be married, and we think about the fact that one day we're going to have grandchildren, and then absolutely lots of them. and then we just think about like your mom, she made that journey to come here and start a new life, but then you and the generations that will follow. That's their legacy that she started off.
Absolutely.
So I think for us, that's how we see it. We see that we've started a new legacy.
Yes.
And that will follow through for many generations.
Yeah.
I remember Anne and Tony. Not long, I think, after Annabella was born, our youngest daughter.
Anne and Tony.
My mother-in-law.
Catching up.
And they probably identify with some aspects of this, which is why you feel like such a familiarity and a kinship with them as well. But I remember asking not long after Annabella was born, it's like, do you feel like this ties you to New Zealand more somewhat? And they both said, like, you know, unequivocally, like there's something about actually having, like, you know, not just your children, but your children's children having a ties to the land. Like there's something in that. I'm wondering, was that part of the influencing of the choice for you guys in coming over to here, that you thought this is what we want for our children, our legacy? Was that kind of part of it played into the decision?
We wanted, I think, for our children, a life that was simpler, slower, not so focused on
material
wealth. Attaining, you know, you the people in South Africa, it's like money is everything.
Well, status.
You know, when people meet you, they judge you by what job you have, what car. Not all the people generalizing, right? What car you drive, you know,
how
big your house is and that kind of thing. And I find that the generation growing up are so influenced by everything American, bigger, better, you know.
We didn't fit into that society. Because we didn't care about, I mean, we had the big house and the cars and the business and everything, but that wasn't important to us. So we felt like we were a mismatch in that society. And we felt attracted to New Zealand because of the fact that, and I know a lot of people who lived here all their life say it has changed over the recent years.
Yeah, you know, it has a bit, yeah.
Yeah. What I was going to say is that you can still go. Today I went to Pack and Save and I saw a lady in her bedroom slippers. You know, people do that.
I've done that.
now, where we came from, you would put on your full makeup just to go to Pack and Save.
Yeah. I mean, I did.
Masks and everything.
I grew up in Auckland and I worked as a youth worker on the North Shore for many years. And most of the kids that I worked with were South African and a lot of Afrikaner kids. And what you're saying, I'm really, that's something I really noticed in their culture was very the big cars and the big house and the status and what they were wearing and all that kind of thing. And I was actually talking to Jared about this earlier, that one of the things I started to do was stop wearing makeup when I went to youth group, because the girls there were so obsessed with looking perfect. And here I was telling them that they were beautiful, but I was turning up with all my makeup done and everything. And I'm like, I've actually got to live this out and in front of these girls. And they were horrified when I turned up without my makeup on. They were like, what are you even doing? But then I grew up in a suburb in Auckland where you wouldn't leave your home without your makeup on either, but yeah. It was next yeah. level with the suffocates, you know, like it was like this whole other kind of, so I really hear that, like it is very different, and it's a subculture now within the North Shore, South Africa.
Yeah, we see that. We see that quite often. But I must still say that as a family, we still live a very simplistic life. We still value being with each other. So for us, lockdown has actually been beautiful because we're loving being with our kids and our kids with us, you know,
most of the time.
Do they all still live at home?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They do.
So they're all grown up and still at home.
Yeah.
Oh, that's lovely. I love that.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say Chase Chase is really
well, when I was growing up, we weren't allowed to leave home until we got married.
Oh. Uh-huh. Well, is that like a cultural Indian thing or a South African thing?
Yeah.
Or?
Yeah.
A cultural thing. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. The Indian people.
But,
I was I turned 18, left school, and I was out of home.
Well, the thing is, it's not like we've got a gun to the head and saying to them, you have to be staying at home. But
I prefer it.
But we love it.
I mean, if they love being there and you guys love having them there, then that says, you know, the fact that they are still there as adults is awesome. Like, that means that they're comfortable there. You might have to pry them out eventually one day. If you want those grandchildren, you're going to have to get them here.
Our children, they're allowed to be here for as long as they want, for as long as they want mommy's cooking, and we're still cool, but
until we become uncool.
But I want to be able to give, I don't have lots materially, but I want to be able to give, I love being a mom the time.
There's always moments, right?
But it's just a gift to have noise in my home and
laughter
and fighting and everything that goes with it. Life's that's messy. Awesome. And
that's beautiful.
I love that.
Gavin, Paula, like, you know, we've loved hearing what you've had to share, and like, you know, we would love to, you know, stay on to 12 p.m. and actually keep talking.
Distracted.
I'm so glad that Chase got a feature. Chase needed to be.
You gorgeous little thing.
Does Chase actually want to mention anything while on the camera, by the way? Like,
how old is Chase?
He'll be 4 in January.
Oh, he's the same age as my girl. Oh, he's beautiful. He's gorgeous. I love him. I keep trying to convince you that we need a small fluffy dog as well as our bigger dog. They need to be friends. But apparently I'm only allowed another animal once one of the three animals has got too old and died, and then I'm allowed a new one. I'll end up with a zoo in my house, because I will just keep adopting them.
That's pragmatic. Yeah. My God. Sure.
Luke thinks so. He's like, we've got three animals in a two-bedroom house. Like, we're not having any more animals.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
Oh, goodness.
Jared, you were saying.
Yeah, I was just saying, like, it's been an absolute privilege to have you on, and we've loved the conversation. Like, we could stay on till 12, you know.
Steph will be happy with that.
Yeah.
No, I do not think Steph would be happy with that either.
the daggers.
I actually could hear my dog whining outside the door. I haven't heard Luke here, but the dog's upset with
Luke's not whining. Luke's not whining. Yeah. That's good.
Luke doesn't care if I stay on till midnight, but
as long as you're fed, Luke, you'll be fine.
Yeah, he's fine. fine.
Is there anything, I'm just wondering, like, on the back of this wider context of, you know, mixing of religion and culture, in terms of your story, in terms of finding faith and the perseverance that was involved there, and a story of faithfulness on the parts of individual peoples, yourselves, and of God, and of like a story of immigration in the mix of that as well, like a wonderful story. I'm just wondering if there's anything you just, from both of you respectively, you'd like to kind of close out on, to actually say, what would you want if you could speak to the listeners directly, what would you want to actually encourage them with regards to faith in Jesus at this point in time? Yeah, over to both of you if you could.
Okay. You gonna go? Me? Okay, yeah. I'll go. So just to the listeners out there, hopefully our story has touched you in some way, in the sense that you should never give up. Never give up. God never gives up on anyone, so you should never give up. From our experience, that is one thing that I've learned. The other thing that I've learned is that you need to trust God totally. And we did that, landing up on the North Shore with just bags and no job and leaving it to God to say, God, you are in charge. You brought us here. You'll take care of us. Just to share part of my testimony, we arrived in the North Shore and within weeks, people were dropping off boxes of grocery at our front door without us. We'd never asked anyone for anything, but we know that God was working through people. So trusting God is a big thing. The other thing that I've learned is that you can plan your life as much as you want to, but God has his own plans. I never in my wildest dream imagined teaching at a Christian school, because I thought that Christian schools were a bit over the top, you know, like, oh, yeah, that kind of thing. Yeah, that kind of thing. And then I got a job at King. I was offered three jobs at the same time, and I chose Kingsway School. And I must say that my job has actually just become my mission field. And I get to interact with kids on a daily basis, to speak to them, to tell them about my testimony that, listen, God, you might be away from God, but God's going to find you one day. And he's going to bring you close to him. Okay. And the fact that I can work with kids and share with them and encourage them and pray with them on a daily basis, that is a dream. That is a dream. People dream of things like that. I'm actually living it. And so I remember when we left church in South Africa, my pastor said to us, I don't understand why you guys are going to New Zealand, but one day you'll meet me and you'll tell me why. And that I was thinking about it the other day. When I meet him next, I'm going to say to him, I know why God sent me to this land. He sent me to serve him and serve his people in the field of education. And so if I can encourage anyone, it's just, yeah, be strong in your faith. Trust is a big thing that I know most of us want to be in control of everything. We want to be in control of our lives. We want to be in control of everything that happens to us. But sometimes we have to just learn to let go and say, Lord, I'll leave it up to you. You will show me the way. And when that happens, something happens in you. That you it actually takes away all your fears. It takes away all your anxiety. It takes away all your the things that are negative, because you've handed it over to God. You said, listen, Lord, I trust you on this. And when you can do that, you find that your life becomes so much simpler, in the sense that you know that he wants the best for you. In fact, Jared gave me his dad's frame, which is actually next to my bed. And it's my favorite verse in the Bible, which sometimes people say is overrated, which is Jeremiah 29:11. But I live by that because I know our God. I know our God. I know that he wants us to have the best. He wants us to prosper. He wants us to do well. And so why should we deny ourselves of that? All we need to do is trust in him. And if we can do that, I think that's my biggest lesson that I've learned in life.
Nice.
Beautiful.
Nice. Yeah, what about you, Paula?
First, I'd like to say thank you for the opportunity of being able to share with both of you and everybody else. I'm a big chatterbox, but not not when it comes to standing up and addressing a lot of people or just, you know, it's sometimes I get scared. But
and yet you always do it so well when you do.
Yeah, you wouldn't have even known. You've been amazing. It's been great. So yeah, well done you.
But you know, I also know that sometimes there are things in our or opportunities in our lives that are bigger than our fears. Mm-hmm. Opportunities that we need to take hold of, because it means by sharing our story, both Gav's and mine, I'm able to affect change in somebody else's lives or bring about encouragement to somebody else, somebody who's maybe going through something similar like we did. I also want to say, feel free to be able to ask the difficult questions. Mm. And if you don't get the answers, go to somebody else. Mm. But keep questioning, because it's in that questioning that we truly find Jesus. And also, I think being quiet sometimes and just waiting for your answer. You know, we live in a world where everything happens instantly. We want everything. We want the answers now, and we want it, you know,
yesterday.
We have so much of noise coming around at us, us, noise, and sometimes distractions. Mm. And a lot of the times, if we sit down with God's word, we actually realize that noise goes away. You know, it becomes background noise. Mm,
yep.
And I don't know, I'm not very articulate when it comes to trying to get across what I am hoping that, you know, I want to say, is that sometimes in the stillness, and it's in that obedience of handing over something, truly handing something over, and not saying, worrying about whether God is worrying about you, but just handing it over and saying, there we go, not my problem, your problem, Lord. With your strength, you know, I am strengthened by you. It's not by my own will, but your will. And also being obedient to the answer that you're given in return. Because sometimes we've been going through something in our lives at the moment, and you come sometimes question, oh God, you know, that was really the desire of my heart, and I really, really wanted it, you know. But we're also saying, if it's your will, let it be done, but I really want it. And you know, I think that if there's anything, speaking about the story reminds me that if we're saying, God, according to your perfect will, if it is your will, then let it happen. Because if it's not going to happen. Emotion, disappointment, and hurt is human emotion, but God is greater than that human emotion. And I know that sometimes only down the line do we realize, you know what, Lord, if that happened, this would not have happened. So I find that in my faith in helping Gavin to salvation, God has helped me realign my life. He has helped me find my joy in my faith. And I think that regardless of everything and around us and how the world looks like it's crumbling presently, God's got us. He is in control. He's the same yesterday, today, and he'll be the same tomorrow.
Absolutely.
I'm reminded of the words of Psalm 37 for just a couple of verses here, which I thought was really appropriate. Trust in the Lord and do good, dwell in the land and enjoy safe pasture. Take delight in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your heart. Commit your way to the Lord. Trust in him, and he will do this. He will make your righteous reward shine like the dawn, and your vindication like the noonday sun. I think so much of your testimony also involves that subtle theme of obedience as well. Like you're willing to actually do what God asks. And I think he wants not always what we want, but he wants what is best for us. I think you said it earlier, Paula. Like, there's this idea of God, we trusting him in faith. He always wants what is good for his children.
You wanted to say something.
No, that's right. You go.
I'm just what you said, Jared. I'm just reminded of the fact that like I said earlier, you know, we're not meant to see the big picture. We're meant to see a certain to a certain point in front of us. Mm-hmm. I remember going to some conference at one stage, and there was a woman was talking about she and her husband and her children were up a mountain hiking up, and then suddenly the weather changed and it became dark and gloomy and really horrible and misty. And they all they had was a single torch that her husband had. Mm-hmm. And they had to get down that single pathway down the mountain. And all they could see was a little light that was shining in, from their torch. And everybody held on to each other and followed that little light. And so you cannot see the bottom of the mountain, but you know you're going to get there. And that's what I think we have to learn, is that we have to learn, hey, God, you got this. If it doesn't work, you've got another plan. So
absolutely.
We can't say like, oh, I'm so disappointed in you, God. You didn't, you know, that didn't work for me, or you didn't get that for me. The thing is, like, when you look back in your life, you look at, okay, that really happened for a certain reason. If it didn't happen at that time, then it happened at a later stage for a reason, and you can see the reason why. You know, so the whole story unfolds, you know.
See, I've been thinking as both of you were talking, my late mother-in-law, my husband and I took care of her until she died of breast cancer a few years ago, and her favorite Bible verse in her last few months was, "Be still and know that I am God." And she would say to me, it's just that breathing and going, I know that no matter what's happening, no matter what the craziness is, no matter what my fears are, if I can just sit still and know that God has got this, and that he has written the ending already, and the ending is good and he wins, then it's okay, you know. And she used to, and that became it's actually what I meditate to, is that breathe still and be still and know that I am God. And I really hear that in both of your stories, is that idea of waiting and waiting expectantly and knowing that something will happen, but having no idea what that will be, you know, or when it will be. Which is scary.
It's a beautiful
thing. Scary. Yeah, it's beautiful and it's terrifying and it's wonderful. And, you know, and it's, we always want it in our time. And yet when it's God's time, it's always so much better when we don't try and force the issue.
That's true.
Hello, I want to say that I didn't know you at all from the beginning of this podcast. And I have thoroughly enjoyed getting to know you. I would love, once you guys are out of lockdown, Auckland. no, I mean, my love and my sympathies are with you. When you're out of lockdown, I do want to come up and see Jared and Caleb. Anyway, we should just make it a big family thing and all get together say hi.
Why not?
Because I love big gatherings. It's always fun. I would really love to pray for you guys before we end, but I always like to ask people, what is there anything you specifically would like prayer for? Instead of me imposing my prayer wills upon you, it doesn't have to be specific. If there's just something in general that you would like for us as a community to lift up before God, we would love to do that for you.
So we're trying to get into the property market. We're trying to buy a house. And it feels like, impossible. Mm. But like I said, I know that we serve a God of impossibles. And just some moments where you kind of, for what we can afford, there isn't much.
We need to move down to Taupo.
down here. It's the only way we afford it out. But,
you know, I've been chatting with Anne quite a bit, and you know, she's been such a sense of encouragement. Person been encouraging us. And, you know, it's just, I know that God's got this. I know it. But sometimes it's hard, you know, and but I've decided that I'm not going to house hunt. The house is going to find me.
Okay. Cool. Well, we will pray for that house to come a knocking. You'll wake up and it'll just be on your front lawn and it'll be a house. Absolutely. And again, that's about the whole being still, knowing he's God, waiting, all that kind of horrible, horrible stuff that we don't like doing.
Yeah.
Obedience. Oh, God.
Obedience and patience, man. It's like, I am not a patient person. It's something that God has to teach me over and over and over. So, yeah, I feel you.
And buying a
house is stressful.
Yeah, there's that beautiful little miracle. Someone who actually asked Jesus to do a miracle for them, and you know, Jesus encouraged them to just believe, and then it was said, like, I do believe, help my unbelief, right? I identify with that
beautiful
prayer.
Line. Absolutely. Lord, help my unbelief. You guys are fantastic. I think you're amazing. I hope I can meet you in person one day if this COVID thing ever ends. But let me pray for you and then we will close up. Awesome.
Yeah.
Jesus, thank you for Gavin and Paula. Thank you so much for their story of faithfulness and obedience and patience and just incredible miracles, really, of knowing that you can work, but having no idea what that will look like, and having words given to them for things that seemed impossible and ridiculous, and it turning out. And Lord, this is just such a story of you working through against crazy odds, really, and against lives and situations and apartheid and everything, where it would seem to be more natural for Gavin and Paula to never have walked in your way and to have been angry and frustrated, and instead are such loving and devoted people. And that is amazing and such a testimony to your love for them and their obedience to that love. Lord, we are so grateful that they are in New Zealand, that they are here doing your work with our children, that they have found a new home here and a legacy for their grandchildren. And we pray for their daughter who's engaged, that her marriage will be as joy-filled and fruitful and everything as her parents have been, and that she will head out into life, married life, with you as her focus, and you as the center of her marriage, and that the grandchildren that will come along will grow in faith and wisdom and in you, that they will know you as well. And the legacy of these two amazing grandparents will be these continued generations of faithfulness in you, Lord. Lord, we lift up to you this whole housing thing. You know what they need. You know what they want. You know their wish list, and you know what you want them to have as well. And we pray that, you know, they line up as closely as possible. But Lord, we know that your will is better than what we want, and that their story has shown this over and over again, that if they rest in you and they be still and they wait, that you will work. And Lord, we ask for you to give them strength and patience during this time, that you will bring to them what they need. You'll bring them a house that will be a place of love and ministry and an overflow of their faith, that people who walk into that home will be blessed, and that they will know you in that space. And it will be a place full of noise and laughter and children and family and just craziness, where people will walk in and open up the fridge and sit down and have a cup of tea, and they won't care. And Lord, we pray for that home, and that it will come in your perfect time. And until that moment, we ask for you to give them the strength to be obedient and to wait. But Lord, again, thank you so much for this couple. Thank you for their story. We ask that you use it to bless others, that others will come to know you in a greater and deeper way, and that, yeah, they will continue to bless everyone that they meet. And Lord, thank you for them. In Jesus' name, amen.
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 Thank you, guys.
It has been a pleasure. It's been fantastic. But yeah, so we'll just say goodbye here to our viewers, and we will see you next time, everybody.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Bless you guys.
Yeah. Bye, Jared. Okay.